change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, this is Mickey Desai, and you're listening to the Nonprofit Snapcast. I have on the line with me today Kathy Kruchoff. Kathy, did I get it correct?
You did.
Thank you, Kathy. I'm very glad we get to have this conversation today. Kathy is the president of the Finley Hancock Community Foundation in Ohio. Kathy, how long have you been in that role?
I am just finishing my 12th year as president and CEO.
Oh, my goodness. That's a good long time.
Yeah, it's been great.
What kind of changes have you seen over a decade plus?
You know, it's interesting. When I first came to the Community Foundation, it was in 2008, and there was economic turmoil, and similar to what we're experiencing now, a lot of anxiety. And in our community, we had just gone through a major flooding event that had impacted a large portion of our downtown. And I was reflecting back on how here we are 12 years later in the midst of more economic turmoil and another widespread catastrophe, impacting a lot of lives and having to really think creatively and out of the box in terms of how to assist the community and support the nonprofits who are out on the front lines.
Right. No, yeah, and I'm curious if, I'm sure we're going to talk about it, pandemic-related changes to the way your organization operates.
Yeah.
The original thing that brought us together was the opportunity to talk about program-related investments.
That's right.
And so let's get into that. What is a program-related investment?
A program-related investment, I describe it as a hybrid. For a foundation, it is a kind of grant. And for the nonprofit that receives it, it's a form of a loan. And it really brings together a couple of very powerful elements, especially for the foundation and for the community that they serve. One of the reasons that I'm very excited about PRIs, program-related investments, is that especially right now during the pandemic and with all of the social upheaval that's really come into the forefront in a lot of communities, foundations are receiving pressure to do more, to give more, to grant more. And yet foundations, by their very nature, are limited to what they can spend each year. They're limited by history, tradition, but they're also limited by some laws that put them in the position of being a fiduciary. And we can't just crank up our spending to meet an immediate need in the community. So a PRI, a program-related investment, opens another door for a community foundation to have impact in their community without undermining their endowment or overspending their endowment.
Interesting. So you describe these as loans.
That they often take the form of loans. So think about it this way. If you have a foundation, a community foundation, a private foundation, a family foundation, you have an endowment and you probably already have in that endowment, it's invested and you have a fixed income allocation in your portfolio for that endowment. So what would it look like if instead of sending money in that endowment to a bond fund that's invested somewhere out of New York or Houston or wherever, what if you took a portion of that fixed income allocation in your portfolio and invested it locally in your own community? And that's what a PRI does. It creates a pathway for an organization, for a foundation to make local investments in local projects to benefit their community without dipping into their grant pool. I looked up the total, and this is an old number. This is back in 2016, but according to the Foundation Center, community foundations had $90 billion in assets in 2016. And if we took 1% of that and invested it in our local communities through PRIs, mm-hmm. we'd be looking at almost $1 billion more of local investment.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a huge potential, but it's not used. Community foundations in particular don't use them. And that's why I was really excited to have the opportunity to talk with you today.
Yeah. So I have multiple questions. Sure. One of which is, why do you suppose community foundations are reluctant to use them?
I think there's a couple of reasons. Community foundations at their very core are a community institution, and their boards are made up of community-minded people. And they're all people who live in the community, have strong ties to the community. And I think that when we do our grant making, that's probably the most visible thing that we do. Versus when we do our investing, that sort of happens over here off to the side. And we really, it's not as transparent or visible to the community. So when you start talking about increasing your activity or doing something different in the community or making loans into the community, I think a lot of foundation boards kind of step back and become hyper cautious. And it can be a long education process with the board and especially with the finance committee to have them understand this change in philosophy about using these endowed funds for local investing versus the typical, we send them to a broker and the broker invests them on our behalf, and it's all sort of invisible. So I think there's a hesitancy there because we don't want to make a mistake.
Right.
And this kind of puts you a little bit more out there. And it's possible to make a mistake, but as I tell my board, it's probably not going to happen. So let's figure out what's the worst thing that could happen. And the worst thing that could happen is you can award a PRI to an organization and they won't be able to pay it back.
Right. That's what's my next question.
That's the worst thing that can happen. But we do that every day when we award grants. We deliver sums of money to organizations with no expectation that they'll be able to pay it back. That's not even part of the conversation. So the risk, I think, is more in our minds than it is on our balance sheets.
Right. So let me make sure I understand the legality of this. Yes. And the pool of grant monies goes out to a population of applicants, people right. who successfully won those awards, and there is simply no legal obligation to pay that back. They get that money for whatever it is they wrote the grant for.
That's right.
And so a PRI doesn't come with the legal obligation to have it paid back, or is there a consequence for
yeah. there when you it's very flexible.
Uh-huh.
So what a lot of foundations do is they structure it as a loan. And if the organization that they've awarded the PRI to has difficulty with the repayment, they can simply forgive the loan, or they can make it a non-recoverable grant. They can convert it to a grant.
I see.
So that it really creates a lot of flexibility on the part of the foundation,
right?
And creates opportunity, much more opportunity for the organization that's receiving it. The fact of the matter is that the majority of organizations receiving loans pay them back mm-hmm. because who wants to default on a loan from a community institution like a local foundation? It's very, very rare that this happens. In doing some research on this, I was looking at community development financing institutions, which is a whole other topic that we could talk about. They're called our CDFIs, mm-hmm. and they award loans to nonprofit organizations. Their default rate is 0.1%.
Oh my goodness.
So the risk of default is actually very low.
Very small, yeah.
Very small.
Wow. Okay. How long have PRIs been in existence?
Since 1969.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, it just seems like such a revolutionary thing, and yet they're as old as I am.
Yeah. And in the Community Foundation world in particular, if you say PRI, most people will look at you and say, what? I read about those, but it seemed really complicated.
Right.
And I don't want to downplay that. You know, when you start looking into it, you know, it is a new idea. It is a new program. It is a new way of doing business. And obviously, yeah, you want to make sure that you set it up properly, but yeah, there are ways to make it, to simplify it. And one of those ways, if your organization is not ready to directly loan money, to projects in your community, you can work with, one of these CDFIs, these Community Development Financing Institutions, and they work as what's called an intermediary. Mm-hmm. So you make an investment in them, much like you would go to the bank and get a CD. You will give them a sum of money and they will pledge to pay it back to you with some nominal amount of interest. And actually right now it's better than what you would probably get for a CD or a bond. Mm-hmm. And then they will manage all of the lending, the underwriting, the payments, those sorts of things. So it's a very low cost and very efficient way if your foundation wants to get involved in using PRIs as a tool. Using these CDFIs is a very cost effective way, mm-hmm, to dip your toe into the water and see, you know, what might happen in your community and who might come forward and say, yes, I'd like that financing. Yes, we have a project and we'd like to use this kind of loan or financing package to get it off the ground.
Right.
So, very, very powerful, very powerful tool.
Right. And I can see why you would advocate for this as an added way for a community foundation to interface with their community.
Absolutely.
I can see that. Can do you have any examples you can share?
I sure can. So as you mentioned, I'm in Ohio, mm-hmm, and I can give you some Ohio examples at both ends of the spectrum. There is a community here in Ohio, Van Wert. It is not a large community. It's in Northwest Ohio. That community foundation has gone way in deep in their PRI work by making direct investments in projects in their downtown. Van Wert is an older community, and they're very concerned about making sure that their downtown stays vibrant and strong. And so as part of their mission in their community, they have decided to do direct investing, buying property, rehabbing it, and then either selling it or leasing it to micro businesses, women and minority owned businesses, creating market and low and moderate income housing in their community. And they've really gone in a big way, very directly into program related investing. Mm-hmm. And that's a small community. So I guess my point there is that size doesn't matter.
Right, right.
To have an impact. They built their fund over time, and they've got all sorts of just really interesting and exciting projects going on. On the other end, then you have the granddaddy, mm-hmm, of foundations, which is the Cleveland Foundation. $1 billion plus in assets. Right. They have also been very active in the PRI space. They're probably one of the most active community foundations. They've established revolving loan funds. They're investing in affordable housing projects. They're doing business development, whole range of projects directly through direct investing and also through using these intermediaries, the community development financing institutions, the CDFIs.
Mm-hmm. Right. So they the scope of their projects are vastly different.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Goodness. I'm intrigued. I can't wait to do more research on my own about this. How can a foundation, like, obviously I don't have my own foundation yet. I'm still working towards that. but how can a foundation get started if they're not currently doing the PRI thing? How do they open the doors for that?
I would say you start by doing some investigation. There is some really good information available online. One of the resources that I've used is Mission Investors Exchange. They have a great library of policies, model policies, model documents from organizations, from foundations of all different shapes and sizes from all over the US. So very, very exhaustive set of resources there. I think another place that, again, being in the Midwest, we look to the Indiana University, the Lilly School.
Yes.
They have done some really great research on community foundations and PRIs. And a few years ago published a 10-year retrospective study of program-related investing in the United States. And their conclusion of the report was, it's very underutilized, and that continues. It notches up a little bit each year, but it's still a very underutilized tool for community foundations.
Kathy, is there a downside for a foundation to bring this to the table? I imagine there's a little bit more work to be done to manage PRIs, but what's the risk?
If a foundation wanted to get involved in direct investing, like some of the situations I've described, there's cost involved. There's staff time, there's research. You might find yourself wanting to form LLCs or separate 501c3 organizations, those sorts of things. So that might not be the most cost-effective first step. What I found is connecting with a local CDFI in the Midwest. There are several. One is IFF. They're headquartered out of Chicago. They have offices all over the Midwest, including Detroit and Columbus. And I believe they might now have an office in Cincinnati, but I'm not sure about that. Hmm. But there's certainly one of the larger ones that I'm familiar with that I think they're active in about 7 or 8 states in the Midwest. Another CDFI organization that is national and is very committed to housing is LISC, LISC.org. And they're one of the oldest and largest CDFIs. And very, very highly developed program. And I think that, either of those could be a really great first step for a local community foundation to start their investigation. When you think about the sort of the spectrum of cost and risk, investing in a local or regional CDFI, it's very low cost and it's very low risk. Mm-hmm. And it can be a way to dramatically increase your foundation's ability to get involved in projects that, frankly, you wouldn't be able to with just grant support.
Right. Kathy, I love the subject matter. I wish we had more time to talk about this. I do hope we can visit again in the future to do more episodes together. If a listener had any questions or somehow wanted to get in touch with you, would it be appropriate and how would you suggest they do that?
I'd be happy to talk with folks about PRIs. I'm on LinkedIn, and if a person wanted to look me up on LinkedIn and send me a message, I'd be happy to do that. Or they can contact our community foundation and shoot me an email. If you go to our webpage, which is the very simple community-foundation.com, you'll see contact us and you'll see my email and contact information right there.
Excellent. Thank you. Kathy, this is wonderful stuff. Thank you for taking the time to do this episode with me today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
To our listeners, thank you as always for joining us. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to the show and leave us a rating via whatever mechanism you use to listen to the Snapcast. Your 5-star ratings make us more findable by search engines, and we are grateful to you for helping us grow our audience. In the meantime, we'll see you with another episode in a few days.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.